if you just listen to the training rules, Sikkhapada, Sankosata, and 1 month of the rains retreat has passed, and we have got plenty of opportunity to practice in many ways, both like from the form and from the input that we have been given, both from the Dhamma side and from the Vinaya side, from the sides of like putting forth private effort and from the side of putting in communal effort. I feel at least like we've had a complete set of training possibilities. And there must be something in for everybody, I believe. Yet, it's not that we then do part of it and the rest we just kind of ignore. But the ones that we particularly enjoy, we try to link them to the things that we don't yet enjoy, and so kind of make the practice round. It's one of the kind of idioms that Lompa Cha used to make the practice really round. Say, make it flow and make it kind of steady and make it even, go through the day in a way that we don't kind of put aside our training attitude, but keep at it. And now we're approaching a period where we first have only the Vinaya and no morning and evening meetings anymore for not too long, but just the middle month. So then even more, there's more kind of self-responsibility that we need to use for keeping our practice going. Maybe for some of us it is an opportunity to experiment more, to sit, for example, late in the evening. There's no bell or no need to come out at 3:30. Sometimes people have had some refreshments in the afternoon and keep going till 12 or 1. That's quite possible, and I also encourage them to simply go through the night or do a longer stretch if you feel energetic enough. And sometimes for myself, sometimes it used to be certain days, kind of memorable days, say for example Mother's Day, or today is for example Ajahn Chandi's birthday, and just to make an extra effort. And if there's no external kind of obstacles, say whatever, and kind of busy day afterwards, so one can actually do that and extend one's energy towards that personal little kind of aim or effort. Yet we don't want to be over ambitious. That's also kind of a trap that one can fall into. So to make the practice round, means also to make it continuous and to make it sustainable. It's just quite a popular word in politics, sustainable practice. So we just do it in a way that we can roughly gauge our energy and know how far it can take us, and take it a little further than we think, just a little bit, so it doesn't break our neck, but it just keeps us going and makes us feel that we're growing a little. And that's, I think, very, very much the feeling of putting forth effort, which we can easily do in the period of the 3 months that are reserved for us staying together as a not diverse group, and just kind of growing together and having pansa 3 months, not traveling, not going anywhere, just more or less a container of being in the place and being there without any other plans externally. So it's quite easy then to do something in certain limits. If one knows this is not going to be forever, then one can actually put in another bit of energy. Say, if one knows that the time that one aims at is kind of doable and limited, then one can actually really, really kind of put in all one's resources. So that's one of the benefits, and also one of the skills to learn, and just to be able to determine exactly how much one wants to kind of force it a bit and how much one wants to kind of let it relax a bit. We all know about the middle path, but the middle path generally needs a little bit of steering from ourselves. It needs a bit of that feeling of going against the grain. Otherwise, the middle path sometimes diverts towards the vilesas. And so that's why in the forest tradition, oftentimes we're kind of being pushed a bit. I feel like we're mature enough to know our strength quite a lot, and I trust that particularly our group this year is mature enough to gauge by itself how much it needs and how much extra to do. And we've all been particularly inspired by Kuba Ajahn's the beginning of the Pansa and the Popir coming, and then also reading out certain things from our Upacharya, which gives us a bit of a perspective on what is possible in the practice. It's not that it's this amorph, undetermined cloud of nebulous things that are, but there's direct advice as well, and there's also things that we realize possibly thinking about, like the input that we have had, reflecting on in what has been said, like by Lumpur Biek or by in the Ovadas at the beginning of Pansa, for example. Lumpur Anik was also very, very precise. These things, like sometimes we just consume them one after the other and don't really take them in and reiterate them. But like the one with Lumpur Biek sticks quite a bit because there was a slight admonishment in there. I felt like when in the evening, when the questions that we were asking went into worldly territory, as a brainy scholastic parameters, which one can think of, but like cannot really do, or they're not really the level of where we are working with. And this is very true, I think, for all of us, that we sometimes overestimate our what we are doing through giving it a label and naming it something and then comparing it to something that we have heard or seen or read and imagine it to be like that. But like then when we face, say, the reality of our mind and the kilesas, or possibly a little crisis in our practice, or so a little period of drought of inspiration, then we suddenly realize that these insights weren't yet so unshakable as we may have labeled them before. So there's a bit of a caution there to just really always be humble with one's practice, and that also makes it sustainable if one is quite humble with it and just does the simple practices, say the simple ones but steadily, and the simple mindsets in the practice, which many times means to take back one's mind to the basic meditation objects, like say the body, or basic themes like reflecting on death, say not to philosophize about like the death, like all of us could write great books about that, I'm pretty sure. Like we've seen enough funerals, we've heard enough talks around that, we've read enough sutras around that, and we've all got a personal take on why death is like this and that, and what should be done in order to kind of face it or so. But yet, like, the reality would be that we actually, most of us, I believe, very much hold on to our life when we're threatened very easily, and we're not ready to let go in that sense, as actually demanded by the great theme of what we're talking about or working with. Similarly with many other topics, but like I think death is a particularly tangible one, and just to really over and over contemplate say the fragility of the body, of the life that we seem to have right now, and these things, it's just something that is simple enough, and anybody can actually do it without having had much of theoretical input around it. And then sometimes it takes little images like that stick to one's mind that have been kind of changing one's attitude around these things. It can be anything from a little worm being eaten by the modlin to your grandmother on deathbed or something like that. It can be anything, but just to make much of these things that are going straight to the heart rather than to the the things that we build up in the perception level. So yet the working with what we have in our perception, in our memory, if we do it skillfully, or it actually is, it is something that can help us, say, similarly to working with things that we have heard by others, like say if there's something inspiring, a Dhamma talk or some story of somebody, and sometimes it can really stick to the level of changing what our attitude. And so there's different levels of panya that we all know. The Suttamaya panya, for example, is the wisdom that is developed through having heard things, like if somebody tells you something is desana, and it's quite clear in the suttas. That's many times how the savakas, the hearers, actually start with their practice. They hear the Dhamma and somehow it touches them, and there's chintanamaya panya, panya that comes through, say, brain activity, I would say. That's maybe the modern way of putting it. And as you ponder upon it and you think about it, and maybe there's some whatever book you read about it these days. And so it's kind of the overlap between Suttamaya panya and chintanamaya panya is quite close. It takes more of a personal activity and a chintanamaya panya, because you need to really apply your mind, you think around it, and possibly develop your own little take on things. And so it's a worthwhile activity, but it's not yet the bhavanamaya panya, the panya that comes through practice. And I think that was the main thing that Lumpa Biek was warning us around, like if you have those talks about talks or concepts, the chintanamaya panya, and actually what he wanted us to do is like start with simple tasks that are going into the direction of bhavanamaya panya. And yet we're all different. Sometimes the level of joy one gets to brain constructions, and some of us is quite high, and some of us are naturally kind of inclined to delight in ideas also, and it can be quite uplifting as well. Whereas I think generally the old school of Kruba Ajahns, they're more direct in the application of the mind, which of course I believe is the real thing. If you're very direct and you take something that is directly tangible, then it suddenly clicks and changes your attitude and your inner feelings towards the object of contemplation, then that's a real shift. Whereas for us sometimes it takes long memorizations or long kind of reflections or long theories or so, which of course they say it's a bit too complicated to be real. But I would say thinking that those terms is still better than thinking in terms of the world, or thinking or not thinking at all and being heedless and more or less slipping into nonsensical whatever behavior and not being able to discipline one's mind. So what came to my mind is skillful ways of using contemplation. There's sometimes things that one can use, and it's also recommended by the Buddha. So for example, the 10 sannyas, I think one of the monks quoted them the other day, they actually come in two or three places. Like one is the Girimananda Sutta, it's a tangible task to help sick people to develop those 10 sannyas around the body, and things that I can go into in a moment. But they're also just general, consider 10 sannyas. Sannyas is perceptions, like the things that we do in our mind, the reminders. And I looked up in the Thai, or like Thanchakupa Yutu is very skilled in his way of translating these things, that they point to some practice, and they're not academic in that sense. So he says each sannya starts with gamnot. That means that to determine or to focus the mind on. So it's actually a meditation task, the 10 meditation tasks. There are many meditation tasks. There's 40 plus kamatanas, as we know traditionally. And then there's the meditation objects, the anusati, for example, the 10, the 10 anusati, putatama sankha, devada, and jaga, and things like that, and upasama as the last For example, these are real anusati, so it's very clear you use your sati. But with sanya, it's also kind of like if you translate it as gamnot, you know, like you put your mind into that and develop the theme. So then it can also be a real good source of inspiration. You recollect the teachings. It's a bit like the thing that the Venerable Mahamoggallana was given as an advice by the Buddha. When he's drowsy, you recollect the Dhamma, you recite the Dhamma, you think about the Dhamma, so it makes the mind, gives the mind something, a stimulus. So in that sense, we can use sanyas as a training. And of course it's not yet panya, this is the pan always in Thai, it's not sanya, it's the sanya, it's not panya yet, you know. If we don't develop the conceit that we really know these things, but we have them as a tool and as a working object for contemplation, then it's humble enough, and then we'll make our discoveries with that, and which one works and which one is uplifting and which one gives rise to less diversity of thoughts and makes the thoughts become more still and makes the thoughts become more simple and makes the thoughts link directly to experience and start to change your whole way of feeling around these things. The first one of those 10 sannyas is anicca sannya. That anatta sannya is the second. So these two are pretty clear. It's something that we constantly have as a reminder and as a perception, and it's very, very standard, very basic. And if one already, those two, if one internalizes them, then one has made the practice, like one has done it, like if one can really internalize and finds the kind of angle on them, so they really, really become true for one. I say anicca sannya, anatta sannya, then there's asupa sannya, which is the king of kamatanas for the forest tradition, and is very much what Lopa Biek was recommending in many, many ways. Also privately, every now and again, for example, I felt like he was suggesting to myself, like without directly saying, you do this, but like he mentioned a few times, certain things like cutting up your belly, things like that, you know, and if the Ajahn says something like that, then it sticks, and then you have to really do it, and then you take that sanya, what does it look like if you cut up your belly and open up, say, even from the Adam's apple, all the way down to the genitals, more or less, like you can open up and look what's inside. So it's sanya, we don't really know what is in there, but like we imagine it and we kind of work with it, and there's lots of stuff in there, there's lots of things for creative application of the mind and making one overcome drowsiness, and it can really easily come to the point that one thinks, wow, this is really weird, what's inside my body, you know, like, and you get that feeling of nibbida, or like nibbida is a very high term, I don't want to quote that actually, like you say, get a feeling of at least a wandering perception, what is this really, what do I really know, what is this, the life isn't that secure that I thought, or something like that, and it can easily come if you use your own body or the body of a friend and open it up, for example. It's very tangible, very easy to do, because all of us know how to use our brains, we can look into that and then create an image. If the image doesn't come naturally, we give it a little kick, and then it can take off, and then it can take off and be vivid by itself. And this is the point I think that the Kuba Jans want us to meet. But we have to start with something. So we start with asupa sanya, for example, anicca sanya, anatta sanya, maybe a bit abstract for some of us, but like the tangible ones are asupa sanya. And then the next one is adinava sanya. So it's like the dangerous or the disadvantage, seeing the disadvantages and dangers, the things that are not gratifying, say, and this is a famous list of whatever, how many diseases, and I found that particularly helpful to go through that list of diseases and imagine them And say one can do that all night actually, and go through all the diseases like chakku roko, sota roko, gana roko, chiva roko, kaya roko, kanna roko, mukha roko, danta roko, so so, pila so, pila so, and so forth. You know, the, some of them even come up in our ordination chant. So it's quite nice, and you can use the Pali, you can use the English, you can use the Thai, you can use German if you're German, whatever fits, and just kind of think about it, make it a reality, at least on the sanya level, and then it kind of touches one if one does that long enough. So that's another one, like a supa sanya, adinava sanya, is so the adinava comes because of the entry line of that passage in the sutra. It says like there's lots of dukkha in this body. Yeah, so you just see the disadvantage of having a body, and through contemplating all the illnesses. So adinava sanya, then pahana sanya, just to clarify mentally that the effort to abandon. Pahana sanya, viraka sanya, nirota sanya, viraka. It's more on the conceptual level really, like these ones, viraka. Nirota sanya is like thinking about like dispassion, and it's very nice passage and how it talks about viraka sanya, nirota sanya. It says etang santang etang panetang yatitang sapa sankara samato sapupati patnisako tanakayo virako nipananti. It talks about nirvana all the way. It says like isn't this peaceful, isn't this sublime, the stilling of all formations, and so forth. It's a sutta passage that we know, and it goes one for viraka and one for nirota, and it ends, both of them end with nibbana. So it's a contemplation of how nice it is to leave it all behind. It's the positive side, the positive sanya. You got the negative ones where you see the danger and you see the sickness, and the positive one is like about like, oh yeah, isn't that peaceful, isn't that sublime, the Buddha takes you to the cessation of cravings, and cessation of thirst, and the cessation of dukkha, and the cessation of raga, of lust and desire. And so I think that the really valid concepts, so to say, if one has a mind that needs some concepts, and every now and again these are concepts that are allowable. If one doesn't develop them into a ditty or into a kind of theory, but like makes one feel how so you can go through those lists of dhammas and feel the different aspect of the overall feel of anicca, anatta, asupa, pahana, and then adinava, and then viraga, nirodha, and then you got like sapa sankara samato. No, what's the next one? Is sapa sankhya, so anitta sanya is similar to the viraka nirodha. It talks about like the not wishful nature of all sankharas becomes more abstract, and then sapa loke anapirata sanya, the non-desirable and less of the world in itself. And the last one is a bit funny, it ends up with anapanasati. The last one is the anapanasati, then eventually, which is actually not a sanya in that sense. So I'm a bit perplexed about that, but it seems like a bit of a kamatana build-up. You go all the way, kind of contemplate simple truths, and my name, it's not sure, or it's not me, and then you go to the asupa thing, drag it in, and you go to the death stuff, and it's not really death, but the illnesses of the body, and then you start with the efforts, like abandoning the wholesome and thinking positive, abandoning the unwholesome and thinking positive, and then you incline yourself to all this kind of great, peaceful, sublime things that are so refined, and incline your mind towards it, and then see the coarseness of the world, see the coarseness of sankharas, and then eventually you have anapanasati, which is kind of the, you know, the maybe kind of like what we really then work with, like when we're fed up with thinking, and then we work with anapanasati, we just got the breath, and then so that could be a real all-night program, something like that, or like a something for use on many hours on the Jhonkhompa. So this is just one example from my personal, you know, kind of repertoire, and it's not in, not for everybody. And some of the sannyas that one can use are a bit shorter, more easy. When very short is the 32 parts of the body, very easy, and we always chant it anyway. Can spend a universe of contemplation with that one. And it's not limited at all. Or like as an excellent grounds for contemplation is the Satipatthana Sutta. And again, there's so many things that people can get into scholarly attitudes, but I find just simply going through the body part, the stuff that has to do with Gaya capacity, you know, the first Satipatthana is such a rich pool of kamatanas which one can use, and just to contemplate them just from the outside a bit, from the sannya side, and then get more interested, and then the effort locks into one and makes much of it and makes it interesting and makes it inspiring. So this is a bit like to balance like the idea we shouldn't have like these brainy attitudes at all. If we use them right, I think Lungpo Biak wouldn't scold us. If they're not theory in the approach, but like if we use the theory for practice, like if we use something that we have memorized or something that we've heard, Sutta Maya Panya, and we think of it in a way that is tangible and that's inspiring for our effort to keep awake and keep the mind applied to the Dhamma, then I think we wouldn't be scolded. And the point we can reach then is where we're actually really fed up with using the brain at some point. This is usually what happens after some time, when it's fed up with applying the mind and pulling it, and trying to think of these things, and you literally experience an empty attitude that comes up then after having just kind of forced yourself to think, forced yourself to contemplate, to memorize and think. Then the mind actually at some point really wants to kind of rest with one of the kamatanas. It can be anything. And then interesting enough, the Anapanasati is in there as well. So maybe that's what the Kubajans many times say. You contemplate a while and then you rest in peace. Like say if the contemplation gets too stressful, then you just lock into one and then just keep forgetting about the rest. Or like another thing adds up to it, then you kind of allow to drop the complexity, and you're kind of getting more into a groove, and then all kinds of interesting things can arise, like that one hasn't forced for sannya, but they come by itself. And fortunately enough, then they are really then informing ourselves, like about something, a new angle which we haven't created by ourselves. It comes then from within. And that maybe in a small scale is already where sannya becomes panya, in a small scale. And then we keep working like that, like making the sannya as a kind of like nothing to hold on to, but something to work with as a tool that's allowable, I would say. And that's many times how the Kubajans use the instructions they derive from kamatana objects, like the 32 parts of the body, which are simple enough to keep in mind and then make them applicable. So this is my reflection for tonight, and everybody has to find their own way of approaching these things. It's just some kind of little stimulus of thought, and just make much of your own kind of like creative Dhamma approach, so we can use the tools that we have well and make much of them and bring them to completion in a round way. So this, I'd like to offer this for reflection tonight.